all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Intravenous here at CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we are located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish speaking peoples. I hope everyone's having a lovely start to their day as it's nice and sunny outside. It's so nice for it to be warm and not have to think about bringing a jacket. Definitely switching it up from the rain that we were seeing earlier in the week and at the weekend. Welcome to Intravenous. I will be your host for the next hour up until 11 a.m. where Democracy Now! Will take over. And I've got an interesting topic today. I had an interview with an assistant professor in the sociology and anthropology department here at SFU, Amanda Watson, talking about the need for recognition of unpaid labor in order to progress in the journey for gender equality in Canada. So we were discussing how we see unpaid labor, what recognition we're currently seeing, and what we want to be seeing, and how it can be intersected to a number of different inequalities as well. And it's a very interesting interview that I have that I'll be playing throughout today's episode, and then gonna slot in some music as well. We've got a lot of CanCon, a lot of FemCon that I've been listening to from the playlist, but I picked this topic because I've been studying sociology for about 5 years, and I've not once really come across discussing unpaid labor and looking at the family kind of structure in that way in terms of gender inequality. We've looked at like the nuclear family and how the stereotypes, traditional gendered stereotypes, can exacerbate gender inequality, but we never specifically looked at unpaid labor. So I was very interested when I was researching topics to do for Intravenous, and I saw that this had been circulating a bit since about the winter of 2024 because of a part of Canada Day at the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women in Geneva in October of 2023. Forgive my pronunciation here, the Association Feminista d'Education et d'Action Sociale, the AFEAS, placed a submission that aims to place women's unpaid work, which is so-called invisible, at the forefront of issues surrounding gender equality. So in the concluding observations on Canada, the CEDAW worried about the disproportionate burden of unpaid labor, caregiving, and domestic responsibilities that are placed on women in Canada, and that it significantly hinders their social and economic empowerment, limiting their access to education, employment opportunities, and career advancement, therefore contributing to economic insecurity and reinforcing gender inequality. So this was all circulating a lot, I found, last winter. And so it's kind of been in my mind a little bit. And then when I came back to Intravenous, I went looking for all of this information again and thought it would be an interesting topic for today on the radio, because following those findings, the committee called on Canada to implement measures to support women performing unpaid work and to develop mechanisms for assessing its impact on poverty and economic inequality, particularly among Indigenous women, women with disabilities, and immigrant women. So it's an interesting topic, and I'd be curious to know what's happening elsewhere in the world aside from Canada in this area, because it's definitely being seen everywhere. So yeah, we're going to play some songs. I'm going to play the interview that I had with Amanda Watson. It was a very interesting discussion. I very much enjoyed it, and I hope you lot all enjoy listening to it. And then if we have time, I went on a bit of a research deep dive and found a really interesting article that I would like to speak about along this topic of the gendered economy and needing recognition for the unpaid work that women are predominantly doing. To start us off, I have a couple of songs from the playlist that I've been loving, and I thought since the weather is so nice, this one would be a good one to start off everyone's morning with, an upbeat kind of new wave dance rock song. So this is going to be from the artist Art Deco. It is called Survival of the Fittest off of the album Serene Demon. And then after that, I'm going to play Late Slap by Dana Gavansky off of the album Late Slap, which is a kind of indie rock pop. And then we'll get right into my interview with Amanda Watson. So stay tuned for that and enjoy Survival of the Fittest by Art Deco.
Caution.
Welcome back to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That was the song Late Slap by the artist Dana Gavansky off of the album Late Slap. And just before that, we heard Survival of the Fittest by Art Deco off of the album Serene Demon. And now we have my interview with the lovely Amanda Watson, who is an assistant professor in the sociology and anthropology department here at SFU, where we were discussing how we see unpaid labor, what recognition we're currently seeing, what we want to be seeing, and how it can intersect to a number of inequalities, not just gender inequality. So that will be playing, and I will see you right after. For today's episode, we're going to be talking about the call for recognition of unpaid work that is hindering women's social mobility in Canada. And I got inspiration for this topic from a couple of articles that I read from back in the winter of 2024 around this issue, because it's not an issue I really thought about. And I've noticed that it's more prevalent in Canada because of the, I'm going to probably butcher the pronunciation, but the Association of Feminist Education at Action Sociale, so the AFEAS, placing a submission to place women's unpaid work that's invisible at the forefront of issues surrounding gender equality. And I'm joined by a professor at SFU, Amanda Watson. Thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. This is my favorite thing to talk about.
I'm so glad, because I was looking for people who would be interested in talking about it. And I'm pretty sure you were like one of the only people that kept coming up when I was Googling. So I'm very thankful that you managed to find my email to join us today. And could you just tell us a bit about yourself, your research? Obviously, this is a big area for you.
Yes, sure. I'm a professor in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at SFU, and I study labor, particularly care work and unpaid work, and also just how people do their work in particular institutions. So usually when we think about institutions, we think of like buildings like the university or like the hospital, but I also think of parenthood as an institution. Like, what are the norms and rules and guidelines that kind of shape the way we make decisions in our everyday lives in our households?
Okay, that sounds very interesting, because I do a sociology and criminology degree, and I don't have any classes back home that have this kind of, I'd say, outlook or focus. So this is a very kind of new area. Yeah, I've noticed that.
We'll get into it, but like, yeah, this is the center of how we understand the world. So it's funny when we have disciplines that study these things that can somehow leave it out on the fringes, which is part of the problem.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, if you're looking at gender equity, I never thought, I have a big interest in gender equity and gender equality. I have a show here where I talk about that a lot. And I would have thought from coming into my like fifth year of studying sociology that this would have come up more when we talk about gender and gender equality, because it is a very big part, but it seems to just get kind of forgotten.
Yeah, it's sort of like left for like feminist sociology. We can talk more about that. It's similar in other disciplines like political science and other social sciences. But there's a huge, robust, multidisciplinary set of literatures that study this. So it's huge. It just can be marginalized within disciplines. But when I study care work, I use like amazing feminist theorists from political economy, from sociology, from the humanities, anthropology, and we're sort of, I think we can draw a line around what we would call studies of unpaid work, or sometimes in the field it's called social reproduction or care studies or motherhood studies. So it's growing, and it's definitely not small.
That's good to hear that it's definitely growing. It just needs to be make sure that globally it's getting I'd say taught, but like,
yes.
Spoken about at least. So yeah, going into, obviously you're a professor here at SFU, could you explain how unpaid care work is currently kind of defined and measured in Canada?
Yes. So it's actually not a simple question. It depends on who is doing the measuring and defining. And so we could think about unpaid care work as anything that involves caring for other people, like caring for children, elderly relatives, or people with disabilities. And in addition to the body needs of people, care work also involves like the work of cooking, cleaning, grocery shopping, laundry, any housework really. It can also involve things that maybe we don't come to mind right away, like sitting next to your child, helping them practice piano, and like the stress that can come with that, the co-regulation and like the toll that can take, and the pleasure that can also be derived from that kind of work. Or it can be like adding bananas to an online grocery order in an app. The definition is really expansive. It's all of the things that we do to keep bodies alive and to keep the world moving.
Yeah, that's interesting because also I think because those things are classed as kind of so mundane and so everyday, it's part of the reason it kind of gets forgotten about that it's a form of care work and unpaid labor.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, and also your question as it pertains to how it is measured, you can see just in how we define care work, unpaid care work, that it's a problem for measurement, right? So, so like sociologists, feminist sociologists over the years have been very creative, and they've used qualitative and quantitative approaches together, to really paint a picture of what happens, at the kitchen table in living rooms. In our mental to-do lists. So one sociologist who was sort of known as a sort of path-forging writer in this area was Arlie Hochschild, and her book The Second Shift was Mixed Methods. And she didn't just count the hours, but she also examined the ways that the imbalance of unpaid work in the home shaped families' relationships, stress, and she's also done a lot of work on emotional labor. So there's time diaries, surveys, interviews, focus groups, lots of different methods to get at painting a picture. And I think we need them all because they all help us understand something about a complex set of systems.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, with the topic of today being that the unpaid labor is not being recognized, there's not really much recognition for it in like public policy. Why do you believe that it's been largely invisible when it's clearly a very essential contribution to keeping society functioning, how it functions?
Depends on how frustrated we want to get here. No, for real. I'm not a policy expert, but I don't think unpaid labor has remained outside of public policy exactly. I guess, feminist activists and scholars have tried over decades in Canada to enact policy that supports caregivers. And because the work is so multifaceted, not one policy there's not a kind of one-fits-all solution. So in this political moment, I mean, in the former Liberal government in Canada, this advocacy has looked like accessible childcare. There's a lot of advocacy right now in BC and other provinces around school breakfast programs and even housing support. Like support for housing insecure and food insecure families is support for women's equality. And so I say to students sometimes, like, what happens at our kitchen tables shapes and is shaped by every aspect of our lives. So a policy agenda that values and visibilizes unpaid labor is robust and multifaceted. And it's really about reproductive justice, that is, bodily autonomy and the right to raise families sustainably. And I really, like, I can't think of anything that's not related to that. So the question is, I guess, how are we going to center this idea in a society that has thought about work differently and thought about the value of work differently? I think we're chipping away at it.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I like the I guess kind of like the metaphor of like at your dinner table is like shaping you and things like that, because I think like how I grew up, and I grew up in a very typical nuclear family. Like I had my mom, my dad, and my brother, and the way that I grew up watching kind of my mom take on a lot of unpaid labor in raising us
whilst my dad was the breadwinner and was going to work is a very interesting outlook, because it's kind of switched, I would say. Now my mum probably works a lot more than my dad, now that me and my brother have grown up, and my dad is now doing kind of the cooking and things when we all sit down for family meals. And it's an interesting way that you, when you think about like what went behind, I guess, like who was cooking and cleaning and doing the grocery shop, and for us to all sit down like that and have that meal together.
And that can, that shapes us so much, right? Like the, our norms and values. One of the, a recent study out of Edmonton that was published in the Journal of Family Psychology surveyed families over five different points in their life. So we call this like a longitudinal survey. And they were attempting to examine how these things shift. So it's interesting to see how, think about how in your family it looked one way, and then paid labor and childcare dropped off, and paid labor opportunities or obligations shifted, and that in turn shifted what happens in the home. That is just completely what we see happening in the literature. Like this is what, like what we do in paid work, who's making more money, whose jobs are more flexible, really shapes who takes on what in the home. And the kid factor, when there are school-aged kids at home or young kids at home, that really increases the load for women in particular, that kind of widens the divide.
Yeah, and you were mentioning about how we are seeing some policies kind of centering around this through like childcare initiatives and stuff like that. Have, from what you've noticed, how effective do you think these policies have been in Canada in recognizing the level, well, the extent that unpaid labor has in gender inequality?
I wonder about this, because while feminists and activists and scholars have advocated for childcare to reduce gender inequality in Canada, sometimes what we think of as feminist gains are also economic decisions that are not moral. Sometimes the political will happens as a result of the economic case. And feminists have been making the economic case. There just still wasn't enough political will because of our kind of our current kind of cultural ideology around programs that are universal, taking the choice away from families or stigmatizing how some families decide to operate. So I think that we are seeing this big investment in childcare right now, and we'll need to study its impacts. It's still in the nascent phases. Money has been injected, but we still haven't seen big increases in wages for early childhood educators, for example, so that they can live in expensive cities like Vancouver, where we have a childcare crisis. So we've yet to see the results of that, but the economic case was required in order to see that political will. In terms of like whether this is going to support and be able to counter any kind of backlash against feminist movements that we're currently seeing is an open question, and I remain skeptical. I'm still happy to see it.
Yeah, because I think as well back in the UK, it's still very new with childcare policies being introduced. I'm not 100% sure what the current state is back over there, but I do remember reading some articles in that it was policies that were starting to get introduced that was relating to childcare and having mothers going back to work sooner than what was happening before.
Right. And so just in that example, you can see how a government might be interested in doing this, not for any kind of a feminist reason, but because the labor market benefits or requires women to go to markets, right? It like makes household incomes go up and helps the economy along. We also see this in sort of pronatalist countries, where like meaning countries that are panicking about low birth rates. They may have, this may go alongside anti-immigration sentiment and encouraging women in the country to have more children, so we'll support them through these kinds of policies. So nothing is simple with respect to supporting unpaid labor. We can always like kind of trace the logics and then trace their impacts.
I'm starting to see that nothing is really ever simple, I think, in terms of the world. Yeah, it's always like there's multiple layers to it, and it's a complex issue.
What is simple is that we as humans all need care, and we thrive when we give care to the extent that we can. And so if we can just find hope in this simple arrangement, you know, we all have needs, we all need to belong, we all need to be fed, we need to break bread together, like those sort of really basic ideas are what, you know, keep me getting up in the morning, because there's nothing more simple than that, right? And everything else is sort of noise around how we're going to make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I find it interesting that you brought up the pro kind of natalist perspective that's coming, because that is something I've only